Welcome back to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley. Colin McDonald with you. 1380 KLIZ, the fan. 105.1 FM this year as well. And available for you at lakeswoodsandirons.com. And also, wherever you find your podcasts, you can find us under Lakes, Woods, and Irons. This segment brought to you in part by Ernie's on Gull, with deck and patio seating, weather permitting, and unmatched Gull Lake view. Open daily at 11 year-round. Check them out on Facebook as well. And the T-Hive, custom apparel for your business, event, team, or family, online at T-Hive.com. Chris Foley with me. Chris, another week in the books on the PGA Tour. And I think one of the more popular guys, won for the sixth time in his career. And he's one of those guys that has caught fire a number of times in his career. And it's like, you know, where's this guy been? And it was Keegan Bradley. And when he starts making birdies, they just happen in bunches.
Yeah, all players are pretty streaky on the PGA Tour, it seems like, but Keegan Bradley especially.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Gets a win in New England, which is where he's from. And, he played well. He's been trending in the right direction. The last year he's played, he had four or five real down years, and has certainly played well the last year.
Yeah, I think popular winner. Early winner in his career, won a major PGA, right? And then, I think a lot of people remember him for his kind of dynamic team up with Phil Mickelson at the Ryder Cup. They were a lot of emotion between those two when they started making birdies and having some fun and winning some matches.
Yeah, Keegan definitely wears his emotion on his sleeve, both hot and cold.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's great about this win for him is that it puts him right in the running for a Ryder Cup spot. You know, he's I think he's fifth or sixth on the list right now, so it's good stuff.
Stunning that Scheffler was right near the top again.
Yeah, he's on an amazing run. In 18 events, his last 18 events, he has two wins, 18 top 12s. He's gained 2.6 strokes gained around over the field, which is very impressive. The only guy who's done that is Tiger Woods over 20 events. And here's another amazing thing, Mackie, is he, for the year, only 63 players have beat him. In those 18 events, 63 players total have beat him, yeah.
Wow.
So all that without putting well.
Right, right. He's not putting that well.
No.
Yeah, he'd be... Well, who knows? He still might. He might win the British. He's probably got to be one of the favorites, certainly.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And Rory played pretty well again.
Rory played well. The player that was really cool to see, and I don't know, a lot of players don't know him, is Zach Blair. Zach's he's been out there 5-6 years, and he's been out with a medical leave for the last 18 months. And Zach is a real golf course architecture nut, and he's built a golf course in the last 2 years in Aiken, South Carolina. But he had a great tournament, his first tournament back, and really kind of, if he plays just decent the rest of the year, he locks up his tour card. So
nice.
And then
yeah.
another great week for Brian Harman, one of the Sea Island guys that we'll talk about with Joe Foley later.
Yeah, and a left-hander.
Yeah.
You gotta like a wrong-hander once in a while. My dad was a wrong-hander, and he was my biggest influence in the game, so...
That speaking of that, Mac, that was a great interview you did with your dad a couple weeks ago. I really enjoyed listening to that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, Dad he speaks his mind, that's for sure, in those days. let you know how he felt about John Daly and the British Open, and kind of had some similar golf courses to you as far as his all-time favorites while he was over there. So that was interesting.
Yeah, I knew he had been over there. I didn't realize he'd been over there a couple times. So that was fun to hear.
Yeah, that was good. All right, we got Joe Foley coming up in the next segment. That'll be good. Get us some news from Sea Island. There's always something going on at Sea Island, isn't there, Chris?
No question. It's one of the hot spots in golf.
Yeah, true. One of the hubs of golf in the world, I think.
Yeah.
We're back with that after this. You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons on The Fan. Welcome back to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley, Colin McDonald with you. 1380 KLIZ The Fan and FM 105.1. And also find us at lakeswoodsandirons.com and at lakeswoodsandirons wherever your podcasts are sold. Very special interview. Chris, I'll let you handle the introduction.
I've got one of my favorite golf pros on, my son Joe Foley, who is the one of the teaching professionals at the Sea Island Golf Performance Center in Sea Island, Georgia. Joe, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
We've had you on a couple times in the past, but for those not familiar with Sea Island, give us a little rundown on where Sea Island is and kind of the story behind Sea Island.
So Sea Island is about halfway between Savannah, Georgia, and Jacksonville, Florida. So if you were going to be flying in, those would be the two major airports that you'd fly into, and that'd be an hour drive. Sea Island was bought in as an island by the Jones family back in 1920. And the Jones family were basically very wealthy investors and owned a race car company from New York. And they decided that they had too much money and wanted to buy their own private island. Upon doing so, they realized that they could make a pretty good investment with buying and starting the resort and golf club down here. And so the golf club, it's actually funny, we're Sea Island Resort, but the golf club itself is on St. Simon's Island, which is just right next door here. And then the main part of the resort is on Sea Island. But historically, from the golf course perspective and golf club perspective, we've been one of the top places in the country for tour players to move to and train. And then historically, I've had some of the best teachers in the country that have lived and trained out of here. And that was kind of a vision of Davis Love III's father and Jack Lumpkin, who recently passed away last year.
And originally, was it the home of the Golf Digest schools?
It wasn't originally the home, but it kind of became the home of the Golf Digest schools through the late 70s, 80s, early 90s, when they were kind of thriving and well. It became that just because all the teachers like to come here and hang out and teach and vacation.
Yeah, it's quite a spot. You've got five top 100 teachers, the top golf fitness guy in the country, and one of the best sports psychologists in the country.
Yeah, so we have five top 100 teachers in the country. We have best golf fitness person in the country in Randy Myers. Tom Hemmings, then, who is our other golf fitness expert, is, I think, Golf Digest ranked, and Golf Magazine as well, ranked number 6 or 7 in the world, as well as Randy being the number one, kind of right up there with Dave Phillips and Dr. Greg Rose from TPI. And then we have Dr. Mo, who is our sports psychologist, who pretty cool. Keegan Bradley's a student of his who's won twice since starting working with him. And he's on a roll. He's got 4 or 5 winners on tour this year, which is pretty special.
Oh, that's great. And tell us about some of the tour players that live there and play and practice there.
Yeah, so it all starts with Davis Love III. Davis is kind of what I call our original tour player here. We had a number of other players before Davis that were kind of, they called it home or they would vacation here. But back in the early 2000s, when we kind of started bringing in the specialists, Davis recruited a lot of young players at the time to come live and train out of here with with all of our teachers and great facilities. So we have guys like Jonathan Bird, who's a 5 or 6 time winner on tour, and several guys like Lucas Glover and Stuart Sink, when they both won their majors in 2009, were living and playing down here. And then now it's kind of gotten younger again, where we have guys like Harris English, Patton Kizzire, JT Poston, a lot of guys that are just really stand-up players on the tour. Harrison. And then we have a number of guys that don't live here that come and train here, like Lou Oosthuizen and Brendan Grace, and Kevin Kisner is one of those guys as well. And so we're pretty fortunate. We see kind of the top-end talent that comes through here every day.
That's really cool. What
I said, you might have to be careful of kids taking you out on a Friday night, Joe, because he likes that kind of thing.
You know, kids, he used to live down here. He anytime he's visited, he doesn't go out as much as he used to, but I think two kids will probably do that to you.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, Joe, I wanted to get you on, talk a little bit about number one, tell us kind of what you're doing. You've been teaching down there full time for a little over 2 years, and you know, you've really become I want to hear about Gears Golf. You've become an expert in Gears, and tell us about that.
So Gears is a motion capture 3D system. So basically, if you've ever seen the behind the scenes stuff, right, the EA Sports games, we put somebody in one of those suits that has all the little balls on them that tracks their motion. And we put those all over the golf club as well. And they hit balls from one of our bays that has the cameras designed for that, from end to out, or we can hit into a net as well. But it basically, in 5 swings, we can get more data on a player using Gears than anybody could get using video or you know, anything else, to be quite frank.
In 5 swings. Wow.
And yep. So Joe, how do you use all that data? What do you use it for?
Well, for instance, with our tour players, we put them in here when they're hitting the ball really well, and we get a baseline for where they are when they're hitting at their best. And then throughout the year, when they're not on, we'll put them back in the suit and put them back on the system, and we'll see where they've gotten off, because it could be posturally, it could be where the club is, where the face is pointed. For instance, we had Brian Harman in the studio here before the U.S. Open, kind of about 10 days before. He didn't feel like he was hitting it very well and hadn't really been playing as well as he was kind of December and January when we first got him in here. And he's a player who was very he really didn't want to do it because he doesn't care about seeing all the data. He just cares what the ball does. And so we got him in here, and his posture had changed pretty significantly between his shoulders and even where the tilt of his neck and spine at address. And it really was affecting the way that the club came down. And for him to be able to see that made a big difference in where he was putting his time in before the U.S. Open.
That's cool. So you, when a tour player comes in, you're the guy that puts them in all that through all the captures and all that?
Yeah. So basically what we've done is Justin Parsons, who works with the majority of our tour players here, Justin will be doing the instruction side of it with them. And then I operate the system and make sure that everything runs smoothly so he can kind of work his magic and do his coaching that side of it. And then I get a lot of learning opportunities out of that as well.
Well, sure. I would say that has to be an incredible learning opportunity, not only to find out what the tour players are doing when they're at their best, but just to observe how, when they're off, how JP will change them and go about correcting their ball flight or what their errors are.
Yeah. You know, it's really incredible for some of these guys, like Patton, for instance. You know, Patton never likes the way he really looks or what his arms look like. And on Gears, we were able to kind of show him how posturally the way he sets up to it the changes that they were working on made a big difference in the amount of space he could create and speed he could produce. You know, so that was a big kind of home run for him with that. And he's never been a great driver of the golf ball, and you'd think he would hit it a mile because he's a big guy, but he's someone who, up until we got him on gears, he didn't realize how much, you know, his arms being about 3 inches shorter, or his wingspan being 3 inches shorter than his height, really affected the way he was swinging.
Interesting. Joe, with gears, are you able to, you know, with all these tour players that you guys have captured and the developers of gears, are you able to put kind of like a model swing together, what, you know, a compilation of all these tour players and what they do, you know, that makes their swings the most efficient?
Yeah, for sure. So that's something that's actually brand new this year is Michael Neff, who's the founder of Gears, at the request of us, but also at the request of the majority of people who use it, was able to take a compilation of all the players that they had in their system to that point and create a tour average model, which has been fairly interesting to see. There's some things with that I would argue that are not quite, because you get all the extremes in there, that are not quite, I think, where they should be. But I think if you threw up, you know, you throw out some of the extremes, like we have Matt Wolf's swing on here, in the system, you know, if you threw his swing out and you threw, you know, Jim Furyk's swing out, for instance, that's on here, kind of those two, you'd see a little bit more neutral kind of numbers in there as well.
Sure. Well, it's got to be fascinating.
Is there a common positive trait that you see kind of with the majority of the guys, Joe?
Yeah, so what we've discovered is the amount of rotation that impact the player has with their, they call it rib cage, but it's essentially how much your torso is rotated. So the amount of side bend or kind of tilt towards the golf ball that's on the trail side of the body. If those match up, typically that player is hitting the ball out of the center of the face or is hitting the ball fairly well. And we don't see any players that bend more on their sides than rotate through the golf ball within 5 degrees.
Yeah.
You are listening to our conversation with Joe Foley, teaching pro at Sea Island, Georgia. We'll be back with more of that interview right after this on The Fan. Welcome back to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley. Colin McDonald with you, 1380 KLIZ The Fan, also 105.1 FM, also lakeswoodsandirons.com, and find us on podcast at Lakes, Woods, and Irons as well. This segment brought your way by Cragen's Courses, home of the 2023 CRMC Classic, and the new Tom Lehman 18. Now back to our conversation with Joe Foley.
Joe, one of the things I wanted to get you on and talk about is junior golf. And, you know, you've spent a lot of time around on several different junior golf programs and seen what's successful and what isn't successful. And, you know, you've got a lot of good players at Sea Island, and a lot of good juniors come from all over the country. And what do you feel like if you want to get a kid hooked on golf, what do you need to do?
From a parent's perspective, I think you just need to keep exposing them to it. And I think that you need to just keep making it fun for them. So if they want to come out and play three holes and then go get a candy bar, that's what you do when you go to the golf course, if that's going to keep them into it. You know, if it's somebody that wants to come out and, you know, they just want to hit balls or putt a few and then kind of hang out on the golf cart for a little bit, you know, that idea, I think, goes a lot further with kids and attracts more kids than we're going to go out to the golf course and you're going to hit balls with me just because I want to hit golf balls. And Sure. If I'm doing it, you're going to do it. So from a parent perspective, I think that's something that's always worked. You know, one of the things like that we've talked about is why you don't see a lot more golf pros kids kind of stay in the game. And that's something I've talked to Gail Peterson about here, whose father was the GM of the Sea Island Golf Club. And I've talked to Davis Love about that, because both him and his, you know, older brother became golf professionals, you know, and their dad was a legendary teacher. And I think some of the differences there are, when we went out to the golf course, it was all about fun. You know, it was, we were out there because we liked to be out there. And so I think if you can do that as a parent, make it so that they like being out there and it's fun for them and they want to keep doing it on their own, then when they go out to the golf course, it's something special. I think they'll stick with it longer than they would otherwise.
Pretty rare if when we play golf that we'd ever do any instruction on the golf course, unless it was an actual, we went out there to work on something. We just play golf, right?
Yeah, no, that's precisely it.
You know, one of the things, kind of a disturbing trend to me that I see more and more, and when I was growing up, you would never see this, but parents, you know, taking their kids to the range and watching them hit every shot that they hit, and, you know, correcting every shot and giving them, you know, golf instruction on, you know, or, you know, tips or whatever it is on every single shot. And, you know, I just think kids have to have the opportunity to practice on their own, you know, work things out on their own, and you know, if they can identify, you know, if they, let's say they're taking lessons or that they're, you know, maybe their father or mother is very knowledgeable about the golf swing, but they've got to kind of find it on their own. Would you agree with that, Joe?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I even think when the kid's taking a lesson, you know, part of what I've been trying to do and the philosophy that I've kind of created for myself is, I think a lot of times in the golf swing, we make it not athletic. And little kids before the age of 8 and kind of between 8 and 12, so I would say 4 to 6 and then 8 to 12 kind of when they're growing, you can have the biggest impact on someone's athletic development during those years just by not even doing anything that out of the ordinary, you know, get them running around, jumping around, throwing the ball. I think if you can make kids do that kind of movement and kind of exercise before they ever get a golf club in their hand, they're going to swing the club much more athletically and in balance and do all the things that we're trying to say to them, but not necessarily have a lot of those thoughts cluttered up or conflicting thoughts going on.
Well, the golf swing is very similar to a lot of the other athletic motion that we do. But Joe, tell us more about that, because I know that's a big part of your junior programs, or especially with your younger kids. The first part of the golf, or, you know, your golf lessons, you've told me that like in your junior programs with groups, you don't even do golf, right? You do other, what are some of the things you do?
So a lot of the times, like with kids down here, they love football. So I have a football that I bought really to do some other stuff, explain things in the swing. But I kind of just decided that we were going to throw the football around for 5 to 10 minutes before we ever got going with a lot of these younger kids. Or we're lucky because our driving range is right on the ocean down here. So when it's low tide, we walk down off the range and we go do kind of a dynamic warm up on the beach. So we'll see if they can jump as far as they can, like in the sand, and do something that's fun where they have to do something where they're physically moving and making a motion before they ever pick up the club. Or we'll go down there even with their club and say, okay, I want you to swipe a piece of sand behind your right toe and then past your left toe and now find the middle and do stuff like that where they're not hitting a golf ball, but they might be moving around. And with two or three kids specifically, we look at, just because they didn't have the strength to really swing a club yet, because they're so little, the act of just throwing a football or a baseball around gave them some structure where when they swung back, they could actually keep the club in front of them and stay in balance.
That's cool. You know, speaking of strength, Joe, you spend so much time around, you know,
two of the great fitness guys in the country, Randy Meyer and Tom Hemming. And, you know, the speed is, you know, definitely the trend in golf. We're all trying to hit it farther. When do you and Randy and Tom feel that kids should start any type of speed training?
So that's interesting. So I think as young as 8 years old, you could start some speed training. Kind of when your peak speed training ages are, from what I've gathered from speaking with Tom and Randy, and then just the other stuff I've read from athletic development models that are out there, is that from like 8 to 12, that would be kind of a speed training years, where if you get it, learn to develop speed early, you're going to be fast your whole life. So this idea that, you know, we want to have these perfect golf swings or mechanically when you're that age, if you move fast just in general or start moving fast, you're going to really create that structure, because you're going to have to figure out what it takes to move the club head fast. So I think that would be an age where kids would start to benefit from a little speed training, but not overdo it. Mm-hmm. And then I would say from 13 to 17 would be the other big speed training age. And once you get up to kind of that age, there's also a little weights and mobility stuff that are thrown in there, where you have a strength training portion of it and a functional movement aspect of it, because your body's developed so much differently.
And how do you explain the difference between swinging fast and swinging hard?
I always tell people, when they're swinging hard, think about how tight their body feels. And when they swing fast, think about how loud the club head sounds. How it swooshes and how loud that is.
Yeah.
So typically when people try and swing hard, I think they shut down their body because it's so tense and stiff. And then they have to use their arms to create the stability that their body would, and they end up slowing down. So like you always said growing up, you know, body creates stability and arms create speed. So if you want to move your arms faster, you got to make your body more stable and be able to throw the arms more and create a bigger arc that way.
Yeah. It's a game of four, or excuse me, it's a game of speed and leverage, not force.
Yes. Oh. Well, speed creates force at impact.
Yeah, right. Force on the back.
Yeah. So if you can, I think, create enough speed, it can make up for a lot of misses.
Yeah. You know, as you know, Joe, one of the things we talk, I like to talk about on the show, is how to practice. And because most people exercise, they don't practice. Give us some of the things that you're around so many elite players. Give us some of the things you see the elite players doing in their practice, and what do they do?
Well, one of the things that I think separates them from the high handicapper is when they show up, they have a plan for what they're going to work on. Whether that be written down, like Zach Johnson, who's very technical in his thinking and his practice, or it's much more relaxed, like Pat Desire, Harris English, but they know what they're going to do. But all of them have what I'd call a check station when they get to the golf course. So as they're warming up, they, you know, would either have a process for checking grip, alignment, and posture, and then working on their mechanics, and keeping the target connected within that, so they never lose the target. And then I would say that they prioritize it, where they spend just a specific amount of time or enough time doing that. They go work on something else, and then they come back, and then it's more performance-based, where they kind of give themselves challenges, where they're not pushing themselves outside their boundaries where they couldn't accomplish it, but they're more so within and kind of pushing it where they'd fail maybe, you know, 25% of the time.
What would be the ratio of full swing practice to short game?
You know, that's interesting. I would say depends on the player. I would say that the shorter the player is, there's a much more emphasis on there's definitely a much more of an emphasis on distance wedges and long iron practice, kind of those two together. And then if a player is longer, we see them work more on kind of around the greens a little bit more, I would say. So it just depends. You know, if we were going to look at like a guy like Harris, for instance, Harris spends a much higher percentage of his time working on iron play and putts inside 8 feet than he does anything else, because that's where his need is.
Sure. So he practices hitting his irons to 8 feet and then putts from inside of that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where I want to get to, Joe.
Wouldn't we all?
But, can you help me with that?
Harris is a flusher of the golf ball, though, so he's kind of the unicorn with that a little bit, too.
Yeah. One of my favorite swings.
Yeah.
Who, you know, you've got a lot of young players there too, Joey. Any up-and-comers we should be keeping our eye on?
Jaybird's son, Jackson, I would say, is one of the kids that really in the next 5 or 6 years is going to be somebody that we should be watching out for.
So that's Jonathan Bird, 8-time winner on the tour. So his son, you said Jackson?
Yeah, Jackson. Jackson's one of the best athletes I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I
saw he just qualified for the U.S. Junior Amateur.
Yeah, you know, he's long, and he's not that big of a kid, you know, physically or muscularly, but he's kind of wiry and controls the club face better than just about anybody I've ever seen.
How about any of your mini tour players that you're seeing good things from?
Well, a guy like that I was roommates with, Austin Morrison, I think is, he's probably one of the best players in the country without status at the moment. But I think that could change fairly quickly. He'd be a guy that I would say is really, really good. And is probably maybe a year or two away from playing on the Corn Ferry Tour. Go ahead.
Any players that our listeners should keep their eyes open for that might be playing in the CRMC, the Canadian Tour event here?
Yeah, probably Dalton Ward, who's been playing a little bit between Canada and the Corn Ferry Tour. Dalton played in it last year as well. Dalton's another student of Justin's, so I always pull for him. And then we have a couple of guys that I think are going to try Monday cue into that, like Will Thompson, who played at Texas. That's a student of Jared Zaks, another one of my mentors down here. You know, we have so many really good players. It's hard to say that any of them are going to do it more than another.
Sure.
Well, any off factor, Joe? I know I asked your dad the same question last year. If it was harder to give a lesson to Tom Lehman's son while Tom Lehman is watching, than it would be. So you, as a young pro, you're in there with some really established type guys. It must be pretty cool to be able to help top end golfers with their game.
Yeah, you know, it's fun being a small part of that. One of the best things about it is some of these guys that have whatever the it factor is.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily know what that is because I think it's so much different depending on the player.
Yeah.
Like a guy like Rory McIlroy, you would say it's the way he drives the ball. And, you know, a guy like Harris, it's how he hits his irons and how he putts inside 8 feet. And, you know, guys like, you know, Davis hit everything well, but he's kind of like Scottie Scheffler, where he hit it so well that his putting was not very good in comparison. You know, if you went back and looked at leading up to Davis winning the PGA at Wingfoot, you would have, and if we had strokes gained, you would have seen something pretty similar to how Scottie Scheffler's been playing lately.
Wow. Well, that's good stuff, Joe. How do people find out more about you and Sea Island and the GPC?
Yeah, so you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter. My Instagram is Joey Foley Golf. And then Our Instagram is at the Sea Island G or at Sea Island GPC. We post a lot of stuff on there, and then on Sea Island's website under the GPC tab, you can go there. That would be seaisland.com.
Perfect. Well, Joe, I know you got a busy day ahead still, and really appreciate you taking the time out to come on the show and share your knowledge.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Good to see you, Joe. Thank you.
Absolutely, Mac. Always a pleasure.
All right. Welcome back to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley. Colin McDonald with you. 1380 KLIZ, also 105.1 FM. And wherever your podcasts are sold as well, look under Lakes, Woods, and Irons. Also find us on Facebook. This segment brought to you in part by Holiday Stores in Cross Lake, Mill Avenue, and Excelsior Road. And by Shannon's Auto Body, new location in East Brainerd to better serve the local community. State-of-the-art facility and a grand opening this week, actually, at Shannon's Auto Body. So that's awesome. Thanks to them for sponsoring the show this year. Chris, women had a major, KPMG. I think it's Runing Yin. I'm not sure I have the name right. Yin, I'm sure of. R-U-O-N-I-N-I-G. R-U-O-N-I-G. So I'm probably in the ballpark anyway.
Yeah, I would say so. We need Google Translate.
I think we do. another player out of Asia who has just taken the world by storm right away. It seems every year somebody new from that part of the world, and just terrific golfers.
Yeah, you know, they've got quite a development model there, Mac, where they really identify players young. And, you know, kind of get them in this funnel and you know, if they support them, you know, incredible. The government supports them and pays for all the golf and instruction and tournaments and all that. And
yeah.
If they really, you know, they get them playing well, awfully young and having honest success. And it's good stuff.
It's a little bit like women's tennis in a way. I don't know if it's burnout, but they're at the top of the world for a short period of time, 4 or 5 years oftentimes, and then some of the world's best players seem to fall away pretty quickly on the LPGA.
Well, you know, I think there's a number of things involved. One, they, you know, they do tend to develop much younger than the men do.
Yeah.
And they've you know, because of that, they've played a shorter period. Or I mean, they play so much more at a younger age and have success. And then, you know, when they want to start, let's say they want to start having families and that, and they're, you know, 25, 26, 27 years old, playing the LPGA Tour is not very conducive to being a mother or, you know, having a family.
Right, yeah. And, well, that's true.
You know, you look at a lady like Julie Inkster, who had such a long career and so much success. I mean, she's the exception to the rule. She's got three daughters, and her husband was a golf pro as well. And she was able to. It's pretty rare that, you know, to be able to manage all those things and still have success. Not too much different than, you know, you see a young player that's had a lot of success. They're not married, and then they get married and have some kids, and a lot of times they drop off a little bit from where they were before.
Yeah,
it takes a while to get back to where they were.
Yeah, I remember we've talked about it before. Jack Nicklaus saying, you know, at the time, "Do you think Tiger can break your records?" And he said, "Well, we'll see when he gets married and had kids and starts to run a couple of corporations."
Yeah.
That takes up a lot of your time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Words of wisdom. Yeah, that's very true of the women's tour, I think. You just think of the two Canadian sisters, the caddy and the player. And, I mean, that relationship won't go on forever. Your sister probably is not going to caddy for you for the rest of your life. They're probably both run into similar type maybe want marriage or children or whatever the case might be at some point in
right.
time. So you break up some of that chemistry.
Right.
And down the road, we got another one more major coming up, the British Open. You're one of your favorites.
Yeah, for sure. It's 3 weeks. We would get Detroit this week, or the Rocket Mortgage. Then John Deere Classic the following week, and then we've got the Open Championships. So at another great, Lynx venue, Royal Liverpool.
And John Deere, one of your favorites.
Well, hometown tournament, so yeah. Always fun to watch. They play a different golf course than they played when I grew up. Caddying in a few times and going to the tournament, so I'm not as familiar with the golf course, but I'd love to follow that tournament.
Who was your most famous loop, Chris?
The most success I had was with Chris Perry, who's actually a Minnesota guy.
Yeah.
I caddied for Chris, and we had the local four-spot qualifying at the golf course I grew up working for. Emi's Golf Course in Davenport, they have the four-spot every year. And he was the NCAA champ, and I happened to caddy for him there. And then, he said when he didn't have a caddy, so he said, "Why don't you caddy for me in the actual tournament?" He ends up making the cut, and I'll tell you, on Sunday, Mac, he was two shots out of the lead on the 13th hole, and hit the short par four. He hits this great drive, and has like a wedge in, and he airmails the green. And ends up making double, and it just kind of took the winds out of his sail. But he ended up, I think he still ended up finishing top 10 or whatever. But paid me after the tournament in cash, crisp $100 bills. I'd never seen that many $100 bills. Which was...
That's a good memory. Yeah, yeah. He was a nice player for a while, Chris Perry.
Yeah, he had a couple of really good years on tour. Had a hand injury that kind of knocked him off the tour. And his dad was Gaylord Perry, I believe, right?
Oh, was it? Yeah, that's interesting.
I think he pitched for Pittsburgh, but I think he pitched for Minnesota as well, didn't he?
Could have been Jim Perry.
Or Jim Perry, yes.
Gaylord's brother. Yeah.
Yeah.
They were always answered to one of those questions, the brothers to win the most games, the Perry brothers.
Well, baseball trivia.
They both had great Hall of Fame careers, yeah. I didn't know they were related. That's interesting. But Jim was a longtime Minnesota guy, so it probably Jim is his dad, yeah.
Yeah, it is Jim. I couldn't think of his name.
Yeah. All right, sir. Appreciate you getting Joe. That was fun.
That was always fun to... talk to Joey D.
Yes, indeed. You've been listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons on 1380 KLIZ.